The Springboks have destroyed Wales by a record score in Cardiff. And in this episode, you are going to get my top five takeaways at full time on this 73-0 annihilation. But before we get started, I'd like to encourage you to buy my book, How to Become a Sports Journalist. I've been in this game for more than 20 years, guys, and I've put my thoughts to paper via pen, as it were. They say it's mightier than the sword. Well, I'd like to believe that I've got a few pearls of wisdom that I might be able to share with aspirant journalists, as well as those who might find themselves in a little bit of a rut mid-career. You can get it on Amazon. I think it would make a great Christmas present, and the link is in the description area down below. So, the top five things. Number one, Springbok scrum dominance. I think we always knew this was coming if we saw what happened last week against the Irish. I think it was always coming. Factor in the 7-1 bomb squad selection by Dr. Russi Erasmus, and Wales were always going to be in trouble as far as this aspect of the game is concerned. And we pretty much saw it from the very beginning. Almost every single Springbok scrum had Wales going backwards. Now, that's one thing to comment on, and they say beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and I certainly think that our scrums are a thing of beauty. I get that it divides opinion, and actually earlier in the week I was speaking to some people who found fault with the way that we go about things, and they were saying that the problem with the scrum in the modern day era, especially right now actually, is that teams are milking them to get penalties. And I said, well, no, just hang on a second. Let's just talk about this for a moment. Yes, it is true that you can win yourself a penalty from a scrum, but that's not something that is only taking place in 2025. In the 90s, teams were scrumming to get themselves penalties. A prop would work hard to earn that penalty and would often be very unhappy if the referee failed to recognize his prowess at winning said penalty. So this is not a new thing. Also, and this, I want to be very clear on this, you don't get a penalty for winning a scrum. Put that another way, you don't get penalized for losing a scrum. It's okay to go backwards. That doesn't automatically mean that you lose the scrum and are penalized for it. You lose the scrum, yes, you might lose possession too, but that doesn't mean that you automatically get penalized. You get penalized for things like standing up outside of the scrum, well, I suppose inside the scrum, forgive my choice of words, and you also get penalized for collapsing the scrum or going to ground. Those are the things that bring about the penalty. Now, I will say that some of the stuff is open to interpretation by the referee, and this is where the grey area comes into it. I grant you that. So, for example, if a team is going backwards and there's wheeling taking place or popping up or going to ground, the directive, the guideline from World Rugby actually says that the referee should assume that the defending team is in the wrong, and that's what actually brings about the scrum penalty. Is it perfect? No, it's not. But this is the situation, and I personally don't have a problem with it. And I suppose you might say, well, you're a Springbok supporter, of course you don't have a problem with it. But I would say I am open to the law being amended in some way. What I would not like to ever see is the scrum being depowered, because again, the scrum is a thing of beauty, but I wonder if you guys know this. In rugby, one of the founding principles of this sport, let's call it rugby union for our international viewers. Rugby union, one of the founding principles is that this is a sport for all shapes and sizes. So you have Sasha Feinberg and Gome Zulu, you have Cheslin Kolbe, but you also have Vilko Lowe and Asenati and Kabakanye, as well as Eben Etzebeth. All of these people can play the same sport together because there's a place in the team for everybody. And if you depower the scrum, you effectively have rugby league. Rugby league, guys, is a sport where the players are almost all the same size, so it's not a sport for all shapes and sizes. It's a sport where the scrum is effectively just a set piece for the sake of restocking the match. And some are saying, well, that's what it should be for. And I counter that by saying no. The scrum, if your intention of it is to simply be there to get things moving again after a break in play, well, then go watch rugby league. rugby union is clearly not for you. Let's move on to point number two. Springbok execution. Now, I thought that in the second half, things opened up a little bit more and we were somewhat more ruthless. And we can actually talk about that because my next point is somewhat closely related to this. But I thought that in the first half, we probably were just a tad off, particularly in the back line. It reminded me of that Ellis Park test match against Australia, where maybe we were just trying to do a little bit too much. Now, the thing about Wales, and I'll talk about this later as well, is that they didn't just pitch up and roll over. They did give it their best. They did try. And don't forget that Steve Tandy had to make 13 changes from a side that got pumped by the All Blacks just last week. So with that in mind, we were always going to win this match convincingly, as we indeed ended up doing. In fact, my prediction was 61-7, so I wasn't actually that far off. Some people said I was arrogant and said that pride comes before the fall. And I'm like, listen, we have a World Cup winning team here, laden with gold medalists, despite all the changes Russie made. And we're playing against a team that has made 13 changes from a side that got pumped the week before. And these 13 men that have come in, good luck to them, but they're not strengthening the side. So it was always going to be, unfortunately, a massacre at the Millennium Stadium, or for sponsorship reasons, a pasting at the Principality. As I say, I thought that in that first half, we did well. Remember, we were 28-0 ahead at the break, but I just thought it looked like we were a little bit off. And there's a few things going on there. As I say, for me, the number one was the backline execution was just a fraction off, and you could say that maybe that had something to do with the Kobus Reinach, Sasha Feinberg, and Gourmet Zulu partnership being broken up. Not that Morne van den Berg had a bad game, but I think that Reinach and SFM is now the number one combo for the Springboks. And so obviously if you break that up just by half, you have a little bit of a disruption. Perhaps, anyway. And as I say, I thought that maybe we just tried to do a little bit too much in that first half. But in the end, it didn't really matter. 28-0 at halftime, 73-0 at full-time. Finding fault really is a nitpicking exercise. Let's move on to point number three. Second half running rugby. And as much as I'm saying we were maybe a little disjointed in that first half, well, the second half, things came together rather beautifully. Helped by one or two cards and ill discipline within the Welsh ranks. But again, you know, they had to do what they had to do to try and keep the scoreline low, which obviously they didn't do, but at least to maintain dignity, which I do think they were able to do. But in the second half, our backline ran riot. The forwards were good. Don't forget, all eight of them came on, well, seven forwards and one back, all came on at the same time, which we'll talk about in the next point. But just seeing that second half execution, it was a thing of beauty. It was very enjoyable. But let me tell you something else, guys. As enjoyable as it is to see Springbok dominance, seeing it against Wales, who are one of the sport's proudest nations, and on top of that, a weakened Wales, a side that had, as I've said before, 13 changes from the week before, and not 13 changes that strengthened the side. There is an element of, I would dare I say, cringeworthiness. You're looking at it and going like, do we really need to be doing this? Is this really necessary? And there was a lot of people who felt that way, that this test match was unnecessary. It wasn't a sellout in Cardiff, but in the end, none of those things really mattered. It was a test match. Sure, it was outside of the test window. Players gained experience, players gained caps, which I suppose you can argue either way whether or not that should have been the case. But they did gain experience. And maybe the Welsh coach especially, but I think Dr. Erasmus too, may have seen what one or two of his other players are truly made of.
Only 21. Feinberg and Gomazulu. Willemsen. And then laid away by Quokka Smith. And the try to be scored by the man who's impressed as much as anyone. Andre Esterhazen.
Let's talk about point number four, the Springbok Bomb Squad. Some call the 7-1 split the Nuke Squad. And I'm not sure how many times this has ever happened in rugby, where all eight came on at the same time. Seven forwards and one backline player, Kobus Reinach being that one back.
Other than that, 7 of the 8 in the pack changed. Ruan Nokia was the only one who maintained his place on the field, as I think we all knew what was going to happen. Zachary Porthen, interesting to see him playing at loosehead after coming on. And we spoke about that in my preview episode, if you caught that. The thinking being that we've already got Thomas du Toit, who can play one or three, and they clearly have identified Porthen as a man who they think can also play one and three. And the advantage of that is that, let's just assume Zach doesn't go to the World Cup in 2027. Thomas du Toit goes down injured. Not a problem. We fly in Zach, and now we have a like-for-like replacement. This is what is so scary about the Springbok setup right now when you talk about depth. We have got at least two, and in many cases, three outstanding players in each position. And that really does make us the envy of the world. But there's one or two things I want to talk to you about as well. And that was the reaction to this bomb squad, or the nuke squad, if you like. A friend of mine, an Englishman, and yes, I know that there aren't too many South Africans who are friendly with the English, but this is a great guy. He really is. He's a Leicester Tigers supporter. He really likes Jasper Visser, and he's a little bit older, older than me as well, and he often waxes lyrical about the days when Leicester had Joel Stransky in their ranks. So you just know this is a good guy. And he sent me a WhatsApp message when the bomb squad went on, and he said, "This is the clearest evidence ever as to why the bench replacement numbers should be reduced to 5 or 6. Now, I can understand why he thinks that or says that. But let me tell you something, guys. The bench is more likely to be expanded to 9 or even 10 eventually than what it is to be reduced back to 7, 6, 5 even. And the reason is because World Rugby are obsessed with head injuries. We've seen the HIAs, or sometimes we don't see the HIAs, so you wonder just how obsessed they are. But I think that they fear an NFL-style lawsuit. A few years ago, if you don't know, in American football in the United States, there was a mass lawsuit from players that have come down with things like dementia, which it's debatable whether or not you actually got that from playing the sport, but also a thing called CTE, which apparently is peculiar to football players. And perhaps even in the future, we might see it in rugby players, football players. When I say football, I mean soccer and any other, boxing, MMA. These are the kinds of sports that you would expect to see this kind of thing in. And the NFL had to settle, and there've been large payouts to former players. And I think World Rugby are very fearful of something similar. We've already seen a lot of people, former players, say things like if they had known the risks before the time, that they wouldn't have played, they would never have played. I don't believe that. I really don't. I think that we all know that rugby is an extremely physical sport. It's a sport of collisions. And anyone can see for themselves going in that there is an inherent risk involved in this sport. Maybe it might not be as extreme as you think it is, but you can't tell me that anyone playing rugby doesn't know before the time that there is a significant risk involved. Same goes for boxing, MMA, you know, those kinds of sports. Nevertheless, the reason that I say it's more likely to go to 9 or even 10 is because already we have to have at least 3 forwards on the bench who specialize as a loosehead, hooker, and tight end. You actually have to designate before the time to the match officials that this guy is going to be our loosehead when he comes on, this guy's the hooker, this guy's the tight end. And you actually saw against Italy there was some confusion when we only named 2 props among our replacements, and that's because Marco van Staden, who started as 8, was designated as the hooker, the replacement hooker, I mean. So that's how that sort of panned out. By the way, just something else, because some people are saying, oh, it's not rugby anymore. Well, guess what? It's the modern era. The sport has changed. It's not the amateur era anymore either. We stopped being an amateur sport 30 years ago. We are now professional. And did you know that this is not the only sport where you have a lot of replacements? For example, in American football, you have 3 units that make up an entire team. So, for example, if you have the ball, your offensive unit, or the offense, is on the field. 11 unique players in unique positions. When you don't have the ball, or in this case,
the team on the other side of the ball in this scenario, that would be the defensive unit or the defense. Again, 11 players who specialize in 11 unique positions. Yeah, sure, you might have one or two who can play in both sets or in both units, but it hardly ever happens. And then you have a third set of players who are called the special unit. And that's usually the guy at the back where you would, if you know American football, where the quarterback sort of stands. Now that's actually where the kicker stands, either to try and kick 3 points or to kick it further downfield. So you've actually got three units. That's 33 players. Sometimes there's a few guys who might play in two of the three units at the same time, but you get the picture. What about hockey? In hockey, you have rolling subs. Guys are rotating all the time throughout the match. Field hockey and ice hockey. What about basketball? Those players don't spend the entire match on the court. They're coming and going all the time as well. So this is not a unique thing to rugby, that this thing of, oh, the 15 players must stay on the field. That's amateur thinking, and this is now the professional era. And I think I've said enough on that matter, so let me move on to point number 5. Wales worked hard. I know it's very difficult to lose 73-0 and to look at that and say the guys tried their best. They didn't lose their dignity out there. And that's exactly what I think. I think I said it even in my preview episode that the Welsh, in these last 2 years where they've had a wretched run, they've only won 2 tests in this 2-year period, both of those coming this year against Japan. But the one thing that I've noticed throughout is that they have never given up. Even here, with 13 different players coming in this week compared to the previous week, significantly weakening the side, no one ever threw in the towel. And that's commendable. And that is one thing that should give Welsh fans some hope. Yes, right now, your team is far behind the top teams in the world. And who knows? It could be the case that this generation, including the 13 that played against South Africa, that didn't play against New Zealand the week before, it could be the case that this generation is not going to live up to the team that came just before them. You know, the Sam Warburton team, for example. What a player he was. Some other outstanding players in that side to boot. It could be the case. And it might be another decade before Wales are a quarterfinal team at the Rugby World Cup again, challenging on a regular basis for the semifinals. In fact, Wales reached 2 semifinals in 3 World Cups between 2011 and 2019. They won the Six Nations a few times along the way as well. They were a top, top team. And they remain a top, top rugby nation. Just right now, they're struggling. And you know what? I'm with you guys. I want you to improve. I want you to get better. And I wish you everything of the best. But what do you think? Do you think that this test match was a waste of time, like a lot of other people are saying, and that we shouldn't have played it, and 73-0 has not helped us or Wales? Or maybe you think it was a good exercise. We're trying to build depth. We're trying to get some experience for both South Africa and Wales. Let me know in the comment section down below. And while you're down there, may I encourage you to head on over to my Patreon page and sign up as a patron. The reason I'm looking for your support is because I would love to do this full time. And if you sign up as a patron, well, there are great benefits to be had. For example, you could get discounts on my soon-to-be-launched online store. I might be able to write an ebook for you on your favorite Springbok rugby player. You could win the brand new James Small biography that's coming out soon. And you might even be able to have quarterly Zoom calls with me, where we discuss famous Springbok players and matches from the past, or even the present. All of this is to also help me go to Australia in 2027 and cover the Rugby World Cup for you from down under on a daily basis. It all starts from as little as $5 per month, depending on what you want. But if you used to work at Eskom and they gave you a nice bonus when you left, then you might want to sign up for the $100 per month option. And I'll see you next time.